We just sang about saying what's in our heart loud and clear for the whole world to hear. And we've heard some of our members speak from their hearts today about their experiences with mental disorders and emotional challenges. But of course, loud and clear is not the typical way that we speak about such matters. Many of us feel anxious, embarrassed, shamed, afraid, or confused about how to speak about the full spectrum of health, which of course includes not just our physical health, but also our emotional, mental, and spiritual health, which Roger helped us see really are not separate at all. But just the names of some mental disorders elicit an emotional reaction within us. Depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, mania. My colleague Laura Mancuso says that each of these medical diagnoses carry an accompanying spiritual crisis. So inherent in depression is the spiritual crisis of despair. Connected to anxiety is fear and lack of trust. The experience of schizophrenia includes the spiritual crisis of alienation. And mania has the spiritual difficulty of relentless restlessness. Despair, fear, lack of trust, alienation, restlessness. I can certainly identify with each of these in my own life. I can remember weeks or months when one was especially prevalent. I can also take any day and find moments of. I'm imagining it's the same for most of you as well. I once heard a presentation about accessibility for people with physical disabilities, and the presenter said that each of us in the room was temporarily able-bodied. That at some point, most of us would experience some kind of physical disability, whether the result of an accident, a health condition, or simply aging, there would be periods when we would be limited in our mobility. And I've generally been lucky so far, but when I've strained my back, I've been grateful for an elevator. And when I had Aaron in a stroller, I really appreciated those curb cutouts. And I'd like to propose that we each also temporarily experience mental and emotional health. Because, of course, each of us experiences challenges in our circumstances and in our physiology that generate mental and emotional disorder in our lives. The poet Denise Levertov has a poem entitled On Being. And I interpret that title to mean the poem is about the nature of being human for each of us. I know this happiness is provisional. The looming presences, great suffering, great fear, withdraw only into peripheral vision. But ineluctable, this shimmering of wind in the blue leaves, this flood of stillness widening the lake of sky, this need to dance, this need to kneel, this mystery. In our lives, there are times when we need to dance. We are so full of joy and energy and freedom. And there are times when we need to kneel. We are so weighed down by our burdens, or so overcome with emotion, or so in awe of the mystery. And certainly it is a mystery, this being human. And part of what makes mental disorders so difficult is that they are a mystery. What combination of circumstance, life experience, trauma, social pressure, genetics, neurochemistry produces disorder? The experts learn more and more each day, but they still give us no definitive answer. And of course, part of that mystery comes from secrecy. Mental disorders are invisible. They can't be identified by a wheelchair or a surgical scar or a scarlet rash. And people don't often speak of them for fear of the stigma, the loss of relationships, the loss of employment opportunities. So I'd like us to just quickly get a sense of the prevalence of mental disorders in a way that it's not invisible. So if you're willing, please raise one hand if you or someone in your immediate family has ever experienced a mental disorder. And now raise your hand. Keep your hands up, please. Raise your hand or raise a second hand if any of your extended family or friends has experienced a mental disorder. So just look at the hands raised in this great hall. Suddenly it becomes more visible. And we can recognize that any of us, none of us are alone. And there are, of course, the analysis of the causes is complex, but experience shows us relief is available. It's not the end of normal life to get a diagnosis of a mental disorder. Most people return to healthy, productive lives with effective support and treatment. And even people with chronic disorders that continue and endure can reduce their suffering. We all move back and forth on this continuum, in and out of total health. Support and treatment is needed, though, to get better, and too often people don't speak up, don't share their situation, don't find the help. We're stymied by these misinterpretations, which endure. Mental illness is seen as something of the mind, something we should be able to think ourselves out of, or something of character. If we only had more self-control, if only we were better people, more calm or more energized, more disciplined or more easygoing. Or we think it's solely dependent upon circumstances. So if I can just change the situation, or if I can just get through this, then the depression or the anxiety or the compulsions will go away. And each of these interpretations implies some kind of control that we wish we had. But of course, these misinterpretations prevent us from seeking help where we would really find it. And of course, it's not always easy to find help. Even if someone's lucky enough to have good medical insurance, many insurance companies limit mental health benefits or cover them at a lower percentage than physical health expenses. There's fear it'll become a pre-existing condition. And of course, healthcare reform is addressing some of these issues, and many in our congregation engage in these critical issues. Rosalie Caffrey leads our efforts to understand and influence just healthcare reform, and Roger Howe will actually be moderating a panel this Tuesday in Medford. There's details in your announcements. And I'm proud that we as a congregation participate in the Unitarian Universalist Association's health insurance program, which offers the same coverage for mental and physical health expenses. But even with reform and this progress, fears remain. Not just about insurance, but someone at a gathering about mental health said, often very intelligent people appear to be too high functioning by mental health providers, and they're denied services because it's thought they don't need them. Many people confuse high intelligence with automatic real world success and emotional stability. So you're basically left high and dry. People also are so concerned that they're going to be defined by their mental disorder, saying, I'm not my mental illness, it's only a part of me. And as Unitarian Universalists, we affirm people for their inherent worth and dignity, whatever their state of health. And we remember that it makes a difference that we're here for each other. Mary spoke about how she's seen the alignment of our UU principles with the healing principles that she discovered in her own experiences and in her psychotherapy practice. So how do we acknowledge our interdependent web? How do we accept one another and encourage spiritual growth, even in the midst of great difficulty? One story that illustrates how we might do it comes from the Quaker writer Parker Palmer. He shared with Krista Tippett, the NPR host, experience of severe depression. I had folks coming to me, of course, who wanted to be helpful, and sadly, many of them weren't. These were the people who would say, gosh, Parker, Why are you sitting here so depressed? It's a beautiful day outside. Go! Feel the sunshine and smell the flowers. And that leaves a depressed person even more depressed. Because while you know intellectually that it's sunny out and the flowers are lovely and fragrant, you can't really feel any of that in your body, which is dead in a sensory way. Other people would come and say, "Gosh, Parker, why are you so depressed? You're such a good person. You've helped so many people." And that would leave me feeling more depressed because I would feel I've just defrauded another person who, if they really knew what a schmuck I was, would cast me into the darkness where I already am. But there was this one friend who came to me after asking permission to do so every afternoon about 4 o'clock. He sat me down in a chair in the room, took off my shoes, and massaged my feet. He hardly ever said anything. What he mainly did for me was be willing to be present to me in my suffering. He just hung in with me in this very quiet, very simple, very tactile way. It became a metaphor of the kind of community we need to extend to people who are suffering in this way, which is a community that is neither invasive of the mystery nor evasive of the suffering, but is willing to hold people in a space, a sacred space of relationship where this person who is on the dark side of the moon can get a little confidence so that they can come around to the other side. So here is this reminder from Parker Palmer, who suffered, that there is that place of strength, that there is an ability to return to the bright side of the moon. The poet Rumi says, "Crying out loud and weeping are great resources. A nursing mother, all she does is wait to hear her child. Just a little beginning whimper and she's there. God created the child. That is your wanting. So that it might cry out. So that milk might come." When you find yourself in a place of strength, listen for the cries. Remember that we all travel along this continuum. Next week, next month, it may be you crying out, reaching out for someone to accompany you. And when we come together to support someone, it's not with pity or sorrow, but with respect for the wisdom gathered, the learning about the human condition, the chance to be in the presence of suffering and mystery. Remembering at the core, each of us is whole and complete.